Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T2T.org.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the new edition of the Buck Sexton Show. We're going to be doing long form conversations, sit downs, hanging out with people, having fireside chats, although there's no fireplace in here because I'm in Miami. There's not a lot of fireplaces in Miami in general. But we are joined by a fantastic first guest, Ann Coulter. She has written 13 New York Times bestsellers, including a number of number one bestsellers. You know her from, well, all of her appearances on TV, from her fierce Twitter game, and, of course, because she is the one and only Ann Coulter. Ms. Coulter, thank you for being with us. Appreciate you.
And Substack, that's how you know me now.
How does everyone subscribe to your Substack, Ann?
Well, thank you for asking, Buck Sexton. AnnCoulter.substack.com. That's the only place you can get Ann Coulter unfiltered, no ads. Well, maybe here tonight with you, Buck.
There we go. Fantastic. Yes. So, Ann, tell me some things here. First and foremost, what is top of mind for you in the country right now? If you could fix, let's start with that, Ann, fix one thing for me in America, what would it be?
We need a big, beautiful wall. I was promised a big, beautiful wall, but I mean, seriously, there's a reason that's what carried this buffoon Donald Trump to president in 2016. Whether or not the Talking Heads appreciate it or the New York Times appreciate it, Americans voted for the big, beautiful wall, and we're seeing under Biden the problem with him not having built that wall. Estimates are, I mean, they've caught and released more than 2 million illegals. The estimates go up to 5 million only since Biden has been president. And I mean, there are a lot of reasons not to like that. With it's going to be suppressing, hurting the least among us, the low wage workers, who actually, surprisingly, I will admit, did pretty well under Trump. Why? Because, you know, with these temporary measures, and a lot of it was just his rhetoric, he scared off illegals from trying to come based on the campaign. And then after, he was in office for about a year, they realized he's not doing anything. Let's go back. But there's cultural reasons to care about this. We are the greatest country in the world, and we do have a
true American. So can I ask you this, Ann, because you were the original on the argument here for, well, for a secure border that involved a wall. And in fact, Trump, I believe early on, was even telling people that he read Adios America, your book, and that this is where the idea for this largely came from. So I've been down to the border a bunch of times. No question. And I love this argument with libs. I've had it with them and they always get very, very frustrated. A wall helps. And if you talk to Border Patrol, they'll say it absolutely is helpful, because even in areas where the wall doesn't exist, they can have fewer resources where they have where they have a wall versus where they have no wall, right? So they can kind of focus in on the high traffic areas of drugs, the high traffic. Problem, though, we got, even if we had a wall, they are surrendering. This is what's going on. So I want to know how we deal with that issue, because people are showing up. The wall stops the drug traffickers, the single male migrants. When I say stops, makes it harder for them, right? And makes Border Patrol's job easier. But you have family units that show up to the border wall or anywhere and essentially walk in and they say, hey, here I am. Right. So, and even in a wall situation, they go to a port of entry. They go to areas where, the wall isn't that big. They go over it. And now they say, I want asylum in your country. So what do we do about that?
Well, we invent a time machine. We go back and make Trump keep his promises. Two things about what you just said. Yeah, of course, there are going to be some entry points, but we want a big wall across the entire border, not the 33 miles that Trump built. I do not think that if he had kept his promise, Biden would have come in Biden wouldn't have come in. Trump would have won re-election if he had kept his promises. But moreover, even if a Democrat did come in, they're not going to rip down a wall. It took, you know, like the Great Chinese Wall or the Great Wall of China. That's why we want a wall, because different administrations are going to have different policies. And as long as the border is open and it's just a matter of, well, does the president want to protect American jobs or doesn't he want to protect right. American jobs? And part of what the Democrats just hauling the millions upon millions of illegals in, part of it is just a response to Trump. We were always worried about that he could, on one hand, he didn't back down, but he was so boorish about making the points from Adios America. And I don't even exactly make them in a, you know, Marquis de Queensberry's way.
No.
but he took it to another level, that whole Mexican rapist thing. Oh, it's in my book, but I would have phrased it slightly differently, as I did. And the reaction to Trump was so, the concern was he could end up making it worse and destroying these issues that a lot of people, like me, but lots of others, have been working on for years and caring about, and the American people care about. And I think we've seen that with the whole Democratic Party. If Trump was for it, we are against it. What Biden is doing at the border, Obama would never have done.
This is an open border. I mean, right? If we're being honest about it, they're doing everything they can to make sure as many people as possible can stay at this point. And there's no interior enforcement. I mean, it has been funny. I'm sure you've seen the clips. These are real clips. This is not a joke in the sense that we're making this up. There are migrants who show up and they say, I'm here because of Joe Biden. Right. I mean, they're showing up and they're straight up saying, oh, no, the cartels have told me this is a great time to get here because of Joe Biden.
Yes. And two other things I was going to mention, in addition to changing the culture and really being very harmful to low-wage workers, perhaps we should care about low-wage workers. The other reason the Democrats, and a reaction to Trump, the other reason the Democrats want this is manifestly because they want third worlders to become U.S. citizens and start voting. And what effect will that have? Oh, Republicans keep telling me that Hispanics, they're natural Republicans. Well, oh my gosh, what happened to California? I had a young kid. I was talking to a young kid this weekend who was saying, I just don't understand why Californians vote for Gavin Newsom. Because it's plurality Hispanic now, and Hispanics may not like the trans stuff, if you ask them, they may not like the abortion stuff, but they want welfare. They want the government aid, and they know they're going to get that from the Democrats. So the state that once gave us Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, you couldn't get elected dog catcher in California right now. And it's completely insane the things that Gavin Newsom is doing in California. I kind of hope that the Democrats do move Biden aside. Well, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
But I don't think the rest of the country is ready for Gavin Newsom.
Did you see Eric Adams? I always want someone to explain this to me. Eric Adams is the mayor of New York City. And I would add, not a good one, just in case anyone's wondering. We were supposed to be, oh, he's going to clean up all the streets and the problems. No, that's actually not correct. But anyway, and it's really, I think, because a lot of entrenched interests from the Democrat machine in the city of New York are just no longer. If people knew what's really going on in the district attorney's office and the woke lunatics who are the rank and file in places like that now, they would flee for places where you could go, you know, off grid and making sure that they had access to their own fresh drinking water. But he went to the southern border. And I think it's fascinating because he's there and migrants that he met with said, oh, we hear you take great care of us in New York. So we want to go to New York. So you're in El Paso. You're an illegal migrant. You're saying, well, I want to go to New York City. Meanwhile, New York City's mayor is also telling everybody we can't afford the illegal migrants anymore. The city of New York can't afford them. And I just think this is so interesting because I thought we weren't allowed to say that they were a drain on public resources. When did we just skip to When did we skip to all of a sudden legal migrants are really expensive?
Right. No. And I mean, it does, I think it ought to remind people what a total hero and genius the governor of Florida is, Ron DeSantis. That Martha's Vineyard stunt was the most brilliant political stunt. If that's what liberal media calls it, a stunt. The most brilliant political stunt of my lifetime. Now you have the very, very, very progressive gay governor of Colorado doing the exact same thing. He's sending his illegals to New York. And suddenly these liberal states that in this home we believe, suddenly they get a look at what it's like having the third world dumped in their towns and cities and schools and hospitals, and not so hip to it now. One other thing I wanted to mention before the moment passes, obviously I love our border security guards. They're the last people you want to check with on what's needed at the border. This used to drive me crazy when Trump would do it. Well, I talked to them and you see, it's very important. They want a wall they can see through. No, you don't check with the people whose job will be made obsolete by a big, beautiful wall. No, we can have breaks in it here. It'll just be easier for us here. And look, I love them, but everyone is like this. You don't want something that's going to replace your job. You don't want, I mean, you've probably seen.
But Anne, I mean, even, so I've seen even,
McDonald's.
Even the double fence, for example, people do. So the Border Patrol guys, when I've spoken to them about, I've seen illegals crossing. I've seen the whole thing happen in real time. It's not hard because it's happening constantly, thousands and thousands of people a day.
Right.
And because of the fence, they're slowed down. But there's always going to be ways to get through. I mean, so I'm saying you need Border Patrol even with a wall, right? Like if you have a moat and a high wall at your castle, you still need knights to defend the castle. Otherwise, you know, there's no such thing as a wall that's going to do the job entirely for you.
I'm not saying they will be completely gone, but they are not experts on how to keep people out of your country. You know who are experts? Israel is an expert. Check with them on their wall. The first year they put it up, illegal immigration went down by, I believe, 90%. It may be more than 90%. That wasn't good enough for Israel. So their wall goes deep, deep, deep into the ground. Yes, they still have security guards. And by the way, they have detention cells.
I mean, they have military. I've been to that border wall. It's a militarized border. Full on.
Yep. Well, maybe we should have them running our border. Check with them.
I think the Saudis, by the way, are building a big fence, too, along quite militarized, I'm sure, along with the Yemenis. So not the first time or the last time these sorts of things have been happening. There's a big one that I know of in China. There's a pretty famous one in northern England as well. So, you know, walls do work. It has been a thing for a long time. And I need you to hold for one second because I do need to tell everybody about MyPillow and the incredible Giza Dream Sheets. Giza Dream Sheets are absolutely amazing. They're made from the world's best cotton, Giza. I actually wasn't speaking about Egypt a second ago, but I could have been. Giza is amazing. You got to get these. Lowest price ever. $29.98 with promo code BUCK. Giza Dream Sheets in multiple color styles and sizes. Now's the time to upgrade your bedding and enhance your sleep. I sleep on Giza Dream Sheets every night. And do you have a pair of Giza Dream Sheets yet? Can I send you some? You will love them. Maybe.
Yes, I would love a pair, Buck.
Thank you. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special Square, check out the Giza Dream Sheets, enter promo code BUCK, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee, $29.98, promo code BUCK. They actually are amazing sheets. Sleep on them every night. They're quite good. So I asked you about, we went right into the border, we went into immigration, and I think we could also just, what was that?
I was just saying I've won my pillow and I do like it.
Yeah. They're amazing. No, it's a great company. It's the reason why so many people sleep so soundly on it. I also wear the moccasins, the little slippers. The slippers are great, although less need for them in Miami these days than I had in New York, right? Because, you know, feet are a little bit less cold, but I still love them. So, you know how there's this big thing about the Speaker of the House? I want to ask you something. You know how these things go.
I love that.
There was all this brouhaha over who the Speaker of the House is going to be. There's a part of me that was amazed at what seemed like people caring so much about this, and I kept trying to gently tell everybody, this isn't going to affect your life at all. Is there a way we could start to tell people things like, hey, there are things to be fired up about? Like, I think people should be much more fired up about how, you know, fentanyl, not to go back to the border thing, but fentanyl is a drug scourge that is far worse than anything we've ever seen in this country, and yet it's, like, not something that's focused on the news. Meanwhile, the news focused on the the Speaker of the House issue with McCarthy. Like, what did you make of all that? Did you care? Does it matter? Will it matter?
My advice is cut the cord. Don't watch cable. They were the only ones caring. I generally have MSNBC on in the background just so I can monitor the enemy. But it's been pretty much January 6th. Oh, there was Ukraine for a while. And there's been one exciting new story that Representative Santos, is it George Santos? No, they're covering that like January 6th. And for the speaker vote, but then you'd go out on the street and talk to normal people and no one, absolutely no one cared. Now, as a political, nut, as we are, and probably a lot of your listeners and my readers are, I actually think it was a great thing. I think they got a lot of good concessions out of McCarthy. I think there are a lot of great Republicans. There were a few things that were stupid about it. But by and large, I mean, we ended up avoiding having Dan Crenshaw as head of Homeland Committee in the House. That's a good thing right there. And it's always good to scare Republican politicians, especially Republican politicians who have been there for a while. The ones who would like to go establishment, listen to the donors, give them a good scare every once in a while.
Yeah, a brushback pitch, I think. I've learned a lot of sports from Clay, by the way. We talk about these things now. I'm sort of like, yeah, I can't even think of anything off the top of my head now, but that's a sports thing that people get excited about. But a brushback pitch, that's one that I know now, which I think is important for some Republicans, especially the more establishment variety. What happened in your mind in the midterm election? What was the issue? Because I've started to see now, finally, I think people recognizing that there were some big problems. I know it was a few months ago, but I think I got a bit of your analysis. I wanted to hear a little more of what you think went down.
Well, I think too many people in the Republican Party, conservative media, donors, I think, as I've been trying to advise them, they've just been too afraid of Trump. And they were too wedded to Trump. We have to run a candidate who's sucking up to Trump. He's saying you have to make the number one issue of the 2020 election. And he's a paper tiger. They shouldn't have done that. Republicans who were not wedded and beholden to Trump, I think, did reasonably well. I mean, Blake Masters, when I saw his debate with Mark Kelly, that was in Arizona, the astronaut incumbent Democrat, running against this Blake Masters, backed heavily by Silicon Valley's Peter Thiel. When I saw that debate, I thought, oh my gosh, Blake Masters is the smartest guy, perhaps, who has ever run for the United States Senate. He was so good, so good. And then 2 days before the election, it's all over the internet and Fox News, Blake getting a call from Donald Trump and acting like he's a teenage girl talking to Justin Bieber. He's calling me. He's calling me. And what is Trump haranguing him about? You're not making 2020 the number one election. When Trump showed up in Ohio, and I love J.D. Vance, when he showed up in Ohio, I don't know, the day before the election, I emailed people working for J.D. Vance saying, if I lived in Ohio, I would vote against J.D. Vance just because of this speech. This is just get away from him. He won the nomination. Run on your own 2 feet. And so obviously, I'm not alone in that analysis. The Trump-backed candidates and the ones that ended up winning nominations because people were afraid. Oh, but what if we don't get the Trump voters? What if we don't get the Trump voters? And the other issue, so Trump was a total disaster for the midterms. And I think luckily people have seen that now. So it won't, we hopefully won't have the same thing happen in the presidential election. And the other one, I've been pro-life pretty much my whole life. I've written articles on it in the Human Life Review back when I was practicing law. I've had debates on it at Ivy League campuses. I am pro-life. I think it was stupid for some of these states. I mean, one of the most important things is getting rid of the monstrosity of Roe v. Wade and the idea that this really terrible thing, an abortion, is a constitutional right, that that's what our framers were thinking of. Okay, so yay, we won. Pop champagne. It goes back to the states. And I think most of the states, again, I will credit Ron DeSantis in Florida, and a lot of states did this. Republicans just jumped in and said, abortions for the first, it would vary, 12 weeks, 7 weeks, 15 weeks, 16 weeks, and that's it. And that's it. And that seems, after looking at the midterm election, that seems to be the consensus position. And I don't think it's hypocritical for pro-lifers or Republicans to take that position. You can say, I would never have an abortion. I would counsel anyone in my family or anyone I could talk to, don't have an abortion. But you're talking about a law that probably would, I mean, it's hard to say this is a human life and this isn't a crime. There's got to be a penalty. There's got to be a fine. There could be, as one of Trump's candidates was suggesting, a murder charge for the woman. I mean, there's got to be something. And I think people who are even pro-life are saying, I don't want the law to say that, though I wouldn't have an abortion. And I do think this is a human life. And Republicans have got to stop doing, I mean, some of these states and some of the bills, no, it's a life from the moment of conception and we'll prosecute the woman for murder. I mean, it becomes sometimes Republicans, we saw this a lot with the Tea Party, and I think we saw too much of it in the midterms. And that is this idea, I mean, this Todd Akin thing of, you know, watch this, I'm gonna make the basket from over my shoulder. No, don't show off to the zealots. We're trying to save a country here.
Who could save the country? I mean, we were just talking a second ago about, obviously, Trump, which, just so you know, whenever you, I get all the emails that are angry. I'm like, I'm not Ann's keeper. Like, I don't know what to tell people. I'm not in charge of the Coulter flamethrower when it starts, you know, it's amazing to me. Because
he's my keeper. If you have complaints. I want your viewers to know, Buck Sexton is my keeper. If you have complaints, email Buck.
I mean, they do. They're like, how dare you have that woman? I'm like, first of all, like, if we're going to talk about people's credentials, and, you know, Ann and I know each other personally, people's credentials in the conservative movement, there has to be a level at which one's conservatism is not a thing that we're going to really sort of question anymore based on a political candidate or whatever. I would think that, yeah, we could get there at some point, because people are like, she's become a liberal. And I'm like, no, she's definitely hasn't become a liberal. I get those angry emails, but who can? Okay. So if it's, I don't want to ask you what if it is Trump, because I know you think, Ann and I have a bet, for full disclosure, you think that there's just no way, like there's no way it's going to be Trump this go round. I still think there's I think it's a 50-50 shot that it's going to be Trump this time around. I think it's going to be Trump or DeSantis. That's my guess. And so I might be in this position where I'm like, better Trump than the commies, right? We could all agree on that. So
no, because then we're going to lose and the commies will have 8 years to destroy our country instead of four.
Well, I mean, they're going to win one way or the other, I figure, right? I mean, it's unfortunate.
No,
that
I don't think there's a Democrat who could beat DeSantis. I don't think there is a Democrat who could not beat Trump.
I do think that Democrats desperately want to run against Donald Trump. To that end, I have to ask you, the theory that's out there right now about the classified documents thing. This is another area, by the way, because, you know, when I was in the CIA, we were just the classified document stuff. It's so, I mean, just everything is classified, like the sandwich that I had, you know, 3 weeks ago is classified. Everything is classified. Everything is going to help China defeat us in the nuclear war that's coming. It gets a little bit crazy. That all said, this theory that they're trying to get rid of Biden with this, I think that the simple answer is usually, I'm an Occam's razor guy. I think the simple answer is usually the better answer. I think Joe Biden is a reckless dumbass, and that is the situation with the documents. I don't think there's some grand conspiracy. Do you think there's a conspiracy? I don't know.
No. I think this is probably, because there are so many actual conspiracies against right wingers. I do think Republicans and even friends of mine can be a little too conspiracy minded. They may end up shivving Biden. It could happen. And you're going to know what happens. It's not going to be this bank shot with the classified documents. No, I think the only reason they're acting like this, oh, we're taking this very seriously, is because they've just done it to Trump. And I totally agree with you. I didn't think it was a big deal with Trump. Of the three cases, Hillary Clinton's hoarding of classified documents and having her private email server, Biden ending up with these classified documents, no, we don't know what's in them, and the Trump one, I think the only one that was probably pretty serious was the Hillary one.
There, 100%.
There was nefariousness. I think she was hiding what she was doing from Obama, but those are documents that belong to the American people, and to be destroying her email server. No, that is all nefarious.
Yeah, she was trying to evade FOIA, basically, because State Department personnel have unclassified email, and you can send, so you can send somebody, you know, at state.gov or whatever, and all it takes is one of the multi-million dollar, like Saudi or Chinese or you name it, donors to the Clinton Global Initiative to be like, hey, I wrote you a big check, I demand a meeting. Like, all it takes is one of those,
right?
Or somebody to say the wrong thing, and all of a sudden that, because they were running a huge influence peddling scam. I mean, I remember I was at CNN in the days when that was all being talked about. And for one, they were, I mean, actually mocking the idea that there was anything classified in her emails when I would talk about that, which was pretty funny. And then also mocking the idea that the Clintons had, what was it they had raised? I can't even remember the number at this point. But I mean, they made $100 million basically giving speeches and ghostwriting books. Nobody, and you know this business very well, nobody makes $100 million in a matter of whatever it was, you know, 10 years by giving speeches and getting a couple of books ghostwritten. That doesn't, $100 million.
And now that she's not president, I think the donations have really gone to kind of a trickle.
They shut down the Clinton Global Initiative in 2017. In like 6 months in, they didn't even really wait very long on it. They kind of went for it right away. So if it is not, can I ask you this one? If it's not Biden, who's the scariest candidate that the Republicans could face in terms of obviously being able to win?
That's a good question. I do think the Democrats are in trouble, which is why I really hope it's DeSantis, because the country is barely hanging on by its fingernails right now. And DeSantis is certainly at this point, unquestionably our strongest candidate. I think the Democrats are really, other than, I mean, this is why they're bringing in all these third worlders to vote for them in the years to come. Doesn't matter in California, they'll elect a nut like Gavin Newsom. Get ready for that, America. But if there are still enough sane people, or, you know, slash actual Americans voting in this country, I think the Democrats are in trouble, because once they get rid of, you know, their senile dementia patients, you're getting down pretty quickly to the woke progressive Ilhan Omars, who is a respectable Democrat, or that could win a primary. There are a few, but they couldn't possibly win a Democratic primary.
What about Youngkin, Nikki Haley, Kristi Noem? I'm trying to think who else has already been talked about as, I don't know who else thinks that they'd be running on the Republican side. Are any of them in your mind serious possibilities?
No, but you forgot the warmonger under Trump, Pompeo.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the guy with the mustache, Bolton, because he's apparently running.
That would be fantastic. I do hope they all run, because the danger would be as if you had, except I really think DeSantis is kind of standing on his own without much competition. But I would like all of the warmongery, will do nothing about immigration, utterly useless rhino Republicans. I'd love for a lot of them to run. I'd love for a lot of them to get stomped down. The one Republican, my second favorite Republican in the country, and the one I would like DeSantis to pick as his vice president, is Glenn Youngkin of Virginia. I think he's very good observing him.
Yeah, he's been very good so far, too. Is there anyone else on the GOP side, even in Congress, that you find yourself more often than not pleased with and giving all due kudos to for their work? Is there anyone else who sticks out as?
Yes. Well, and one more governor I'll mention, Greg Gianforte of Montana. He's been on fire. Kudos to him. There's another governor, I forget her name. There's some great senators. Hawley is one of my favorites, and I kind of had a prejudice against him because of that. I shouldn't even mention it. I love him. But that silly raised fist salute to the January 6th protesters, I thought he looked like David Hogg. And so I was sort of against him for about a week. But oh my gosh, he's good. And what his objection was good. You know, one of the things that came up, one of the things I love about him, whatever you're saying, oh, why doesn't Congress do this? Why don't the senators do this? You look into it. Oh yeah, somebody's introduced a bill to do that. It's Josh Hawley. Look, it's Josh Hawley again. So there was some news, I guess this week, Ron DeSantis has stopped a bunch of illegal aliens landing on the shore of Florida. And some immigration hawks have said, yeah, he stopped them, but he's not deporting them. Well, governors can't deport illegals. All they can do is make it really uncomfortable for them. All they can do is detain them. All they can do is hold them for ICE. They can't deport illegals. Guess who has introduced a bill that would allow governors to deport illegals? Josh Hawley.
Interesting. I would just add to your point about the Florida illegals arriving situation. The Biden White House initially put out some statement, or I think it was directly from the Biden White House, like Karine Jean-Pierre, that was criticizing this, that it was like showboating that DeSantis was doing, until they found out that there was actually a request from ICE for the National Guard to help. So they were, I mean, sorry, for the you know, Florida National Guard to assist.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was going above and beyond his mandate. He was actually responding to a request for assistance. You mentioned Montana, though. I have to ask you, because I want to get beyond just the usual red meat of politics with Ms. Coulter while we've got her here. Do you watch Yellowstone? And what do you think if you do? Are you a watcher?
I'm sort of horrified to admit that I've not seen it yet. But that is the show that all my friends keep telling me, you got to watch, you got to watch, you got to watch. But I think I need to start at the beginning, right?
I think you have to get past the fact that, you know, Bozeman is apparently like Baghdad. There's just M4s and guys, you know, banging it out on the street corners, firing at each other all the time. There's a little bit of Hollywood license taken with these ranchers, but it is super entertaining. I mean, it's a huge show. Like 17 million people, I think, will last watch the fifth season premiere. Is there anything you're watching these days? With Carrie, I end up watching when I just want to like have quiet time. If we put on The Crown, she's asleep in 5 minutes. But everyone else seems to love that show.
I think I'd probably be asleep, which is why I haven't started to watch it.
What are you watching? Are you really just watching? And if you're watching MSNBC, you have to give us, is anything on MSNBC worth watching other than Joy Reid, who does have an amazing ability? And I say that and it inspires amazement that she can turn anything. Like our conversation about, do you watch Yellowstone, and can actually turn into some kind of monologue on race and racism in America today. I don't know how, but she could do it.
Oh, no, that is totally proof of your and my white supremacy, Buck. Oh, yeah. To be fair, I can't watch MSNBC anymore. I could get a show from 2 years ago, show it to you, and one from last night, and you tell me, has 2 years passed in the interim between these two shows? They all say the exact same thing. And I mean, well, there are exciting moments. Like, I don't know if you knew this, Buck, but do you know how close we came to losing our democracy?
It's amazing. There was an insurrection of unarmed people who didn't actually engage with any kind of military force or precision. It's kind of weird because I've actually been exposed to what a country looks like when people do try to overthrow the government, or when there is an active civil war of some kind going on, sectarian warfare. And it's very different from QAnon Shaman and a bunch of other largely middle-aged folks walking around calmly and taking photos. Now, I'm not saying that it is okay. I've condemned it from the beginning. I condemned it for many reasons. One of them was I was like, this is very stupid because it is handing the Democrats their favorite thing in the world, which is something that they can get the left-wing base all hysterical about for the next 20 years. And this is, but man, they've said it's worse than Pearl Harbor. They've said there are prominent Democrats who have said it is worse than 9/11. And I wonder if we've just reached.
It's not even fun anymore. It's not fun.
Well, you know, I think there's this concept of terminal velocity, right? When you jump out of a plane or something and you hit like the absolute max speed. And then that's just the speed you're going the rest of the way. I think that's what terminal velocity is. It was like a bad Charlie Sheen movie or one of those guys. Have we hit like terminal stupidity over at MSNBC? Like it can't get any dumber or any crazier.
Mostly for me. I mean, dumb and crazy. I love that. No, it's the painful repetition. I can't. I can't listen to the same thing all the time. So even I have not really been watching.
What happened? Because you used to get to go on, and you and others, and you know, me too, back when this was a thing, to debate people of the other side. Have you noticed, when did this happen, where all of a sudden no one now there's no loony left wingers who will go on and have a real like throwdown. I mean, I'm trying to think who are some of the like, didn't you and did you and Al Sharpton ever debate? I know you and probably
totally, at the time.
Right.
It's completely changed. This was the introduction I wrote to my Substack. I mean, all of cable news. I'm sorry, you can't just hold MSNBC as the only offender here. It has become more just saying the things they think the audience wants to hear. And they apparently think that their audiences don't want to hear intelligent commentary or facts or history. Or no, they want to be ginned up, be angry at everything the other side is doing, and with no one there to contradict them. I mean, this is why the American system values debate and free speech, the idea, the John Stuart Mill idea that the truth will rise in a battle for ideas. We won't censor particular viewpoints. Well, cable news has just been an absolute devolution. You could learn more by talking to the hot dog. I mean, seriously, I'm not being sarcastic, to a guy selling hot dogs on the street.
And why is it just considered okay that there are politicians? I mean, Nancy Pelosi, for example, would never go on Fox News or any channel other than effectively regime media for her. I feel like that's something of an indictment. Like, how hard should it be for her to be able to go on? Sure, she'll get heat. I remember being told by somebody who was I forget which Fox show it was, and this is back in the day, but one of these really kind of radical, I think it was gosh, can't remember the guy's name, one of these sort of more radical Islamists from the UK would go on. It might have been Hannity and Combs, back in the Hannity and Combs days, which you know well. And he would say stuff, you know, it's like women should be, the guy had a very sort of thick British accent, you know, women should be treated like, you know, servants or slaves or whatever. And I mean, very inflammatory stuff. And of course, Sean's there and he's just like, you know, look at this lunatic. This guy should be on a terrorist watch list, the whole thing. And I remember I asked somebody, I said, why does this guy go on the show? And they said, no, you don't understand. He goes on because his supporters love it. Even if he's being called all these things that, you know, he wants somebody who's going, he wants to go to battle. They want to see him battle. Right. I mean, that's right. Just in a kind of an extreme example of it. I feel like nobody wants to battle anymore. Everyone just retreats to the amen corner.
Because it's easy. It's lazy. I think pretty much all cable news hosts across the board could do their TV shows in their sleep, saying the same things over and over again. Biden, bad. I mean, I think you could do it with either network. Switch the facts. Don't tell them who did one thing, you know, switch Biden to Trump or Trump to Biden or DeSantis to Biden. And if they think Biden did it, oh, that's very, very, very bad. And they won't, for example, as you and I just did, saying the whole classified document thing is kind of BS.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. It's one of these, though. I think the problem is there's a almost like an arms race among people in the media now, in particular, to do just whatever they think gets the clicks and works. And so there's no one's attached anymore, because it's like, well, if I don't do it, then somebody else is going to do it. And then I just lose. And I think that's very real, by the way. And I think that as there's less and less debate and people aren't exposed, I mean, I will say, and I never attack people on the right publicly. See, it's a politeness thing, Ed. Even when they say, I don't attack people on the right publicly, you know, just because I don't like them or I don't like something they've said, I'll disagree with them on things. But I'm not going to say, you know, that guy is a jackass. We've got plenty of jackasses on the right, some of whom have very substantial audiences. I mean, people who are neither learned nor interesting nor particularly good people when it all comes down to it. There are far more on the left. I mean, I think that a vast majority I would put in that category in the media I'm talking about now. But on the right, I think that something has kind of shifted and happened where you don't have to be very knowledgeable. You don't have to be a very honest person. You certainly don't have to be a very ethical person. And yet you can do very, very well. Is that a change? Am I just naive in thinking that that's a change? Maybe I am. I mean, I haven't been at
this
all
that long.
No, it's
absolutely a change. It used to be, I think TV was fun back then. And I think it was. I mean, you mentioned Hannity and Combs. I remember in the early days of Hannity and Combs, I mean, obviously I'm a political nut. I'm really paying attention to what's going on in the world. But maybe I was writing a book. Maybe there was an issue I hadn't followed. If I wanted to hear both sides of what the argument was, I'd turn on Hannity and Combs. It was, and I'm sure, and I don't mean, though I probably would if I thought about it, I don't mean specifically to diss CNN and MSNBC from the old days. They probably had similar shows on. There was a lot, well, Crossfire. Debate is good. That's how you know. If it's all just people, you know, saying the same thing and, oh, you're so smart. You make me smarter every time you come on my program. And, oh, that's amazing. And there's no one to say, but wait, that fact that was just mentioned isn't actually a fact.
At CNN, for example, people would say, I had this concept of I'm going to go into the lion's den, right? And I knew, mm-hmm. By the way, that place was always hostile to me all the way on down. I mean, I had some friends who were producers over there and people that were decent. But overall, just it was institutionally hostile to conservatives. This is now 2014, 2015 in that time period. But I remember I'd go over there. My thinking was, well, I don't want to let them get away with this nonsense. And like, we've got to bring the fight to the enemy. But what you figure out when you're there is the whole thing is completely rigged. They have the host who is some screaming lib, and they've got one expert or something who they're going to go to first. And then they've got a political pundit who's a Democrat. By the way, the expert and the Democrat pundit totally agree on everything and are like high-fiving each other. And you're going to go last and you're the conservative and it's someone else's show. So you're just there to just get punched right in the nose. That's it. You're not there. They're not going to let you speak. They're going to talk over you. I mean, I've had them just basically cut off to commercial in the middle of me talking. Like, they don't care. So that's why that was part of the dissent. And now they don't even, you know, it's kind of a sad thing, actually, when I see conservatives now at CNN who are doing the dance of, I'm a conservative or I'm a Republican, but all I do is trash the right all the time on TV.
Right.
I think that's a sad thing. Like, I think it's like they're making hostage videos over there.
Oh, no, they're being paid well for those to be the I'm a Republican speech.
The true
but
Republican.
I just don't think cable news has that much influence anymore. I just think it's very a circular cocoon, the way we used to make fun of, you know, the New York Times. I think we're getting the same thing. I mean, we're a country of 325 million people, and on a huge night, you know, primetime cable, what they're getting a few million, and it's mostly average age is what, about 70? So old people in their nursing homes can't figure out how the remote works, but most people are online. And, you know, I just interviewed on Substack John Tierney from the New York Times, magnificent outside the box writer. But one of the books he wrote, which wasn't the main purpose, but I talked to him at the end, is it's called The Power of Bad. Very interesting book about how when bad things, people remember criticism more than they remember praise. A bad first interview is going to hurt you more than a fantastic first impression, that sort of thing, and how you can use it to your benefit. But one of the things he mentions in the book that that I thought was kind of the headline item was that, yes, the legacy media, very, very, very negative. For example, their COVID coverage. By the way, John Tierney was fantastic on COVID. Go back and read his articles in City Journal. Everyone should be reading him. And he was pointing out all along, you're being hysterics. This is the flu. This isn't that bad unless you're an old person. He was right. But every night, how many dead from COVID? They're predicting 2 million in the next 2 weeks. Now, what he said was, I'm sorry, taking a long time to get to the main point. Social media, Twitter, Facebook, people online, that is positive news. That is where positivity gets rewarded. It's the old media, the legacy media, the cable news, where it's just constantly bad news, bad news, bad news.
All right, now hold on a second. I've actually got to tell everybody about something unrelated to the current discussion. Data breaches happen all the time. The big ones get reported on, like the one at Twitter that occurred in the second half of 2021. We're just learning the details now with news of some 200 million email addresses stolen. No password stolen, no credit card information, but still, it's enough for cyber thieves to pretend to be you. And if your info is included in that data breach, big problems. That's why you need LifeLock. LifeLock gives you online identity theft protection. Because your personal information is out there, it's getting exposed. LifeLock has a 24/7 watch on online transactions and new account openings, and they can help you be aware if someone steals your identity. LifeLock detects and alerts you to potential identity threats, like loans taken out in your name, for instance. If you do become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based LifeLock restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but it's easy to help protect yourself with LifeLock. I've relied on them for years for my own online identity theft protection. You can, too. They've come through time and time again. Join now. Save up to 25% off your first year with promo code BUCK. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go online to LifeLock.com and use my name as the promo code BUCK. That's B-U-C-K for 25% off. You want this protection. Trust me. I always thought Michael Crichton was a really, really smart guy, very interesting guy. Obviously, one of the more successful fiction writers of his generation. And I remember, I think it was in a Charlie Rose interview, he said this, and this really stuck in my mind, that it's not even so much, and this was maybe circa, let's say, 2000, he said this, but he said, it's not even that if you want to get attention, you have to be a catastrophist when you're talking about anything of substance. Like, if you want people to pay attention, you have to say, oh, my God, everything's falling apart. Everything is terrible. He said that actually the mindset had shifted so that people were mad at you if you don't take that opinion. It's like, what do you mean? How can you not? And you certainly see this with like the climate change people.
Yes.
And you see this with all just the way a lot of people try to get attention when they're talking about the country. So I agree that there is negativity to that end, or too much negativity. What makes Ann Coulter feel positive about how things are going? I know you're out at the colleges talking to college kids all the time, and college conservatives are the best because they've got that, like, they've just discovered this reality that they know about, and they're in the fight, and they're realizing that, like, they're red pilled at this young age. And but, you know, what gives you a sense that it's all going to move in the right direction somehow, some way?
Well, it is true that conservatives in a liberal environment are generally a lot of fun. They're not just rolling into being conservatives. Conservatives in New York City, conservatives in Los Angeles, and conservatives on college campuses, they're a lot of fun, and they're not going to back down. They don't wither under criticism, or they'd never be conservatives to begin with. Now, I don't think you ought to have to be, you know, brave and strong and courageous to speak the truth in places like college campuses, but you kind of do, and they are. I don't know. Oddly, I am quite optimistic. It's probably, and you know, man, I hope these aren't famous last words, because politicians have broken my heart so many times. But I'm pretty optimistic about Ron DeSantis. I mean, people are living in freedom in Florida. In one of his speeches, it may have been the inaugural speech, I think you were there, but I've heard this, people have said this to me in Florida. And DeSantis repeated it. Europeans who came, left Europe, left Australia, came to Florida, they said they felt like they were leaving East Germany and going to West Germany under communism. And I got to tell you, it is like that when you leave New York.
I tweeted that and it went viral. And when I left New York during the lockdowns to go to Miami, and people also think that was wild exaggeration. They deployed National Guard soldiers to stand around in the airports to collect personal information on people about an aerosolized virus. They're standing there, you know, with their M4s with no magazine in them, just supposed to look like to scare the virus. The whole thing was idiotic beyond words. And I'm actually somebody who, I refuse to let this stuff go. I don't know. That's going to be, you know, to my detriment, but I don't think it's okay what happened at all. And I feel like, you know, back to your Ron DeSantis point, I have never felt like I owed a politician a debt of gratitude before. It is hard to explain how gratifying it was as a New Yorker in particular to be able to leave in the midst of that hellish lunacy and just go to a place where people were just, it was just like being in America again, or what you thought was America.
Yes, I think it's kind of important. Then thank you. I think you should keep talking about this. I think it's important because even though I feel optimistic, I'm not saying I'm putting all of my hopes in him. There are other people. There are people like you, Buck. And I guess I just throw a quick thing real quick in?
Will you tell everybody, just for the record, that I was so anti-mask so early that you were like, really?
No, I know. You were right, though. I learned something interesting during masking. I don't know if you remember. I used to say, no, I was for masks long before COVID.
I know.
I fly a lot, and I used to get a lot of colds, and I'd put a mask on. I wasn't a dork, like walking onto the plane with my mask. But once I was seated, I would be a dork. I'd pull it down to talk to the stewardess. I'd pull it down to go to the bathroom. And it was only when, in the wintertime, when I'd hear, you know, tuberculosis boy sitting behind me. But anyway, now I've learned that the virus can go right through, or, and I assume flu viruses too. But the reason I think it cut down on my colds, and it definitely cut down on my colds from doing a lot of flying, is that when you're sitting on an airplane reading, at least I am constantly touching my face, constantly touching my face. So as long as I had the mask on, it was protecting me. But the reason I think you should continue with the COVID stuff, and I think we all owe Ron DeSantis and other sane, by the way, Glenn Youngkin, the one I mentioned, Governor of Virginia, first day in office, he ended all the mask mandates.
In schools. It was beautiful. I remember that. It was beautiful.
But I think, though I have an optimistic personality, generally, when you look back at history, things that have been very harmful to a society, to a country, one is losing faith, feeling like the country was dishonest and people couldn't be trusted. I mean, there was the betting on that baseball game you always hear about. Sorry, you'll have to check with Clay on exactly what it was. It was the Chicago team. Okay. And then the other one was there was a game show, What's My Line or something like that. And they found out that they were rigged. Quiz show. Yeah. It was like a game quiz show. Sorry. Is there a movie about that? I haven't seen the movie.
Yes, I think anyway, it's called Quiz Show is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay, so now we have just lived through a couple of years where we find out intelligence community, intelligence officers are big, fat, stinking liars. We find out that the brass at the FBI, big, fat, stinking liars. We find out that public health authorities, big, fat, stinking liars. And Twitter, where we're supposed to be able to engage in free speech, was suppressing the free speech. I mean, it's hard to imagine a society where there were this many attacks. The Russian collusion thing. New York Times won the Pulitzer Prize for that. And the whole thing was BS. The whole thing. So you would think that bad things would be coming out of this. And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's why I look to Ron DeSantis. I hope we can turn this around. But boy, Ron DeSantis is going to have a lot on his plate.
Do you have any thoughts or opinions, Ann? I didn't check with Ann on this stuff beforehand. I like Coulter on the fly, you know, because you never know. Sometimes you're just going to have to duck. You don't know what's going to come back at you. But Andrew Tate, are you familiar with this guy? Any of his stuff? He's gotten a lot of attention recently. He's in a prison in Romania now. Do you know about this guy?
Well, I've seen the name, and because he was banned from Twitter, so this is the bad thing about banning people and then letting them back on. Because he was banned and let back on, I just assumed, oh, he's probably funny. He's probably like Gavin McGinnis. Now I've seen more about him. And, you know, to quote my favorite movie, Dr. Strangelove, he's a deviated prevert.
I actually should I see that movie? I haven't seen that one.
Dr. Strangelove? Oh, my gosh. It's my favorite movie.
I haven't seen it. I'll have to check it out. I was just wondering if you had a. By the way, Clay also recently cited now the because we're really bringing this one back. The Coulter Theorem, which I remember from, I'm not sure if it was one of your books or a column, but I do remember it was a Coulter Theorem that the, oh no, it must have been in Mugged, liberal demagoguery from, what was it?
The 70s someone, to Obama.
Thank you. Where the white guilt bank shut down after OJ, because I'm wondering if we're heading a little bit more in that direction now. And also the end of affirmative action in college admissions has been, that's been kind of a fascinating argument recently to see that playing out where people are just saying, yeah, it's good for society if Harvard pretends that Asians, as a matter of policy, have lacking personalities so they can keep them out of Ivy League schools. People are really saying, yeah,
so that's always remember. I just cited this in my affirmative action article on Substack. Bill Gates Foundation gave a lot of money to researchers at Georgetown a couple of years ago to determine who is discriminated against the most in college admissions. So researchers spent some time. They got the colleges to give them the SATs and the admission rate and the race. And this was at the top 200 most selective colleges, so top 100 or 200. That's a lot of colleges. And guess which group their numbers would go up most dramatically if there were no affirmative action, if you weren't allowed to look at race.
I had thought it was Asians, but...
Nope. White men.
Really?
Hmm. Yes.
I remember people poking and asking me all kinds of questions when I got to Amherst, which is one of these liberal arts colleges, but it's one of those places that thinks it's saving the world by getting very social justice focused. They couldn't believe I was a white kid I was not a recruited athlete, not the son of, not a child of alumni, a legacy, and had no like financial connection to the college.
Right.
Like, what? That was a rarity because basically a lot of the white kids or legacies are recruited athletes at those schools now. And if you don't fit into one of those categories, oof, very tough.
Right. So even the legacies, in defense of legacies, what we've learned about IQ, it is at least in part genetic. There is a reversion to the mean. So if you have really smart parents, the odds are the kids won't be as smart as the parents. If you have really dumb parents, the odds are the kids won't be as dumb as the parents. Yet and still, if you have a group of 200 kids in one room, 200 kids in the other room, and you have low IQ parents in the first room and high, the odds are that out of the 200 kids with the high IQ parents, the kids will have higher IQs. I was just thinking of this today, reading some New York Times article about, it just like throws in this BS line about, well, they have generational wealth. No, it's not generational wealth. It's generational IQ.
Another one where Anne is saying stuff that I'm sure some people are going to start to get all googly. They're going to start Googling it, being like, wait a second.
Look, I don't think IQ is the be all end all. Obviously, there are more important qualities than in life. But to pretend that, I'm just saying, the children of legacies, if the legacies got in on the basis of their SAT scores, the odds are the kids are going to have decent SAT scores.
It is just anything that involves IQ, people, there's like this, immediately, if you even talk about it, everyone starts to freak out. I think that's been a trained response for a lot of people for a long time. As I understand it, IQ is really more, it's a general range of capacity. And so even within that, because I have met people in my life who have walked around saying, I'm a 145 IQ or something. And you're like, yeah, you're kind of a loser. So it doesn't, it can be really helpful, but
no,
it also,
right.
Doesn't mean that that's the only thing, as you said, as you rightly understood. So, Anne, if I gave you one last moment to talk to all the folks, obviously they should go check out your Substack, which is phenomenal. I'm a subscriber, full disclosure, and
excellent.
We're going to get Anne some Giza Dream Sheets. Anything else you want to tell everybody?
Okay, Substack columns.
Do you want to make any wild predictions that we'll bring you back on to see if you're right?
Well,
is it DeSantis Biden 2024?
I tend to think, you and I have talked about this. I think we agree. I think there's a good chance Democrats do the weekend of Bernie thing with mm-hmm. Biden, just because once he's gone, look at who do they have? That little Buttigieg, he's doing a bang up job.
Most famous or maybe infamous transportation secretary of all. Like, I can't even name a transportation secretary before this guy.
Oh, I can. Norman Mineta. I hated him more. But week after week, just total disaster under Buttigieg's watch. And every time something like this happens, you just think back to that picture of him and his husband in the hospital rocking the baby as if they're nursing him.
Everyone should go check out Anne's Substack, and we'll have you back. And next time, I need to get deeper into... what you like to read for fun, which I know you're a Grateful Dead person, which I do want to make fun of you for this because I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't understand. But then again, I'm grumpy.
I listen to many things. The only music I don't like is jazz.
Wow. Okay. There's nothing classier than boring jazz, I believe they said once on The Office. So there's that. Ann Coulter with us. Thanks so much, Ann. Great to see you. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you. Great to talk to you, Buck Sexton.